Chapter 7 Blood Calls Blood. As the litter-carrying Matt left the Ammerlin seat's chambers, Moiraine carefully rewrapped the Angrial, a small, age-darkened ivory carving of a woman in flowing robes, in a square of silk, and put it back into her pouch. Working together with the other Aes Sedai, merging their abilities, channeling the flow of the one power to a single task, was tiring work under the best conditions, even with the aid of an Angrial. And working through the night without sleep was not the best conditions. And the work they had done on the boy had not been easy. Lyanna directed the litter-bearers out with sharp gestures and a few crisp words. The two men kept ducking their heads, nervous at being around so many Aes Sedai at once, and one of them, the Ammerlin herself, never mind that the Aes Sedai had been using the power. They had waited in the corridor, squatting against the wall while the work was done, and they were anxious to be gone from the women's apartments. Matt lay with his eyes closed and his face pale, but his chest rose and fell in the even rhythm of a deep sleep. How will this affect matters? Moiraine wondered. He is not necessary with the horn gone, and yet... The door closed behind Lyanna and the litter-bearers, and the Ammerlin drew an unsteady breath. A nasty business, that. Nasty. Her face was smooth, but she rubbed her hands together as if she wanted to wash them. But quite interesting, Varen said. She had been the fourth Aes Sedai the Ammerlin had chosen for the work. It is too bad we do not have the dagger so the healing could be complete. For all we did tonight, he will not live long. Months, perhaps, at best. The three Aes Sedai were alone in the Ammerlin's chambers. Beyond the arrow slits, dawn pearled the sky. But he will have those months now, Moiraine said sharply. And if it can be retrieved, the link can still be broken. If it can be retrieved, yes, of course. It can still be broken, Varen agreed. She was a plump, square-faced woman, and even with the Aes Sedai gift of agelessness, there was a touch of gray in her brown hair. That was her only sign of age, but for an Aes Sedai it meant she was very old indeed. Her voice held steady, though, matching her smooth cheeks. He has been linked to the dagger a long time, however, as a thing like that must be reckoned, and he will be linked longer yet, whether it is found or not. He may already be changed beyond the reach of full healing, even if no longer enough to contaminate others. Such a small thing, that dagger, she mused, but it will corrupt whoever carries it long enough. He who carries it will in turn corrupt those who come in contact with him, and they will corrupt still others, and the hatred and suspicion that destroyed Shadar Logoth, every man and woman's hand turned against every other, will be loose in the world again. I wonder how many people it can taint in, say, a year. It should be possible to calculate a reasonable approximation. Moiraine gave the brown sister a wry look. Another danger confronts us, and she sounds as if it is a puzzle in a book. Light, the Browns truly are not aware of the world at all. Then we must find the dagger, sister. Agilmar is sending men to hunt those who took the horn and slew his oathmen, the same who took the dagger. If one is found, the other will be. Varen nodded, but frowned at the same time. Yet, even if it is found, who can return it safely? Whoever touches it risks the taint if they handle it long. Perhaps in a chest, well wrapped and padded, but it would still be dangerous to those nearby for any great time. Without the dagger itself to study, we cannot be sure how much it must be shielded. But you saw it, and more, Moiraine. You dealt with it, enough for that young man to survive carrying it and to stop him infecting others. You must have a good idea of how strong its influence is. There is one, Moiraine said, who can retrieve the dagger without being harmed by it. One whom we have shielded and buffered against that taint as much as anyone can be. Matt Cawthon. The Ammerlin nodded. Yes, of course. He can do it, if he lives long enough. The light only knows how far it will be carried before Agilmar's men find it, if they do find it. And if the boy dies first... Well, If the dagger is loose that long, we have another worry. She rubbed her eyes tiredly. I think we must find this Padan Fane, too. Why is this dark friend important enough for them to risk what they did to rescue him? Much easier for them just to steal the horn. Still risky as a winter gale in the Sea of Storms coming into the very keep like that, but they compounded their risk to free this dark friend. If the Lurks think he is that important... She paused, and Moiraine knew she was wondering if it truly was still only the Myrdral giving commands. Then so must we. He must be found, Moiraine agreed, hoping that none of the urgency she felt showed. But it is likely he will be found with the horn. As you say, daughter. The Ammerlin pressed fingers to her lips to stifle a yawn. And now, Verin, if you will excuse me, I will just say a few words to Moiraine and then sleep a little. I suppose Agilmar will insist on feasting tonight, since last night was spoiled. Your help was invaluable, daughter. Please remember, say nothing of the nature of the boy's hurt to anyone. There are some of your sisters who would see the shadow in him instead of a thing men made on their own. There was no need to name the Red Aja, and perhaps, Moiraine thought, the Reds were no longer the only ones of whom it was necessary to be wary. I will say nothing, of course, mother. Verin bowed, but made no move toward the door. I thought you might wish to see this, mother. She pulled a small notebook, bound in soft brown leather, from her belt. What was written on the walls in the dungeon? There were few problems with translation. Most was the usual, blasphemy and boasting. Trollocs seemed to know little else, but there was one part done in a better hand. An educated dark friend, or perhaps a Myrdral. It could be only taunting, yet it has the form of poetry, or song, and the sound of prophecy. We know little of prophecies from the Shadow Mother. The Ammerlin hesitated only a moment before nodding. Prophecies from the Shadow, dark prophecies, had an unfortunate way of being fulfilled as well as prophecies from the light. Read it to me. Verin ruffled through the pages, then cleared her throat and began in a calm, level voice. Daughter of the night, she walks again. The ancient war she yet fights. Her new lover she seeks, who shall serve her and die, yet serve still. Who shall stand against her coming? The shining walls shall kneel. Blood feeds blood. Blood calls blood. Blood is, and blood was, and blood shall ever be. The man who channels stands alone. He gives his friends for sacrifice. Two roads before him, one to death beyond dying, one to life eternal. Which will he choose? Which will he choose? What hand shelters? What hand slays? Blood feeds blood. Blood calls blood. Blood is, and blood was, and blood shall ever be. Luke came to the mountains of doom. Isam waited in the high passes. The hunt is now begun. The shadow's hounds now course and kill. One did live and one did die, but both are. The time of change has come. Blood feeds blood. Blood calls blood. Blood is, and blood was, and blood shall ever be. The watchers wait on Toman's head. The seed of the hammer burns the ancient tree. Death shall sow and summer burn before the great Lord comes. Death shall reap and bodies fail before the great Lord comes. Again the seed slays ancient wrong before the great Lord comes. Now the great Lord comes. Now the great Lord comes. Blood feeds blood. Blood calls blood. Blood is and blood was and blood shall ever be. Now the great Lord comes. There was a long silence when she finished. Finally the Ammerlin said, Who else has seen this, daughter? Who knows of it? Only Seraphel, mother. As soon as we had copied it down, I had men scrub the walls. They didn't question. They were eager to be rid of it. The Ammerlin nodded. Good. Too many in the borderlands can puzzle out Trolloc script. No need to give them something else to worry over. They have enough. What do you make of it? Moiraine asked Verin in a careful voice. Is it prophecy, do you think? Varen tilted her head, peering at her notes in thought. Possibly. It has the form of some of the few dark prophecies we know, and parts of it are clear enough. It could still be only a taunt, though. She rested a finger on one line. Daughter of the night, she walks again. That can only mean Lanfear is loose again, or someone wants us to think she is. That would be something to worry us, daughter, the Amerlin Seat said, if it were true. But the Forsaken are still bound. She glanced at Moiraine, looking troubled for an instant before she schooled her features. Even if the seals are weakening, the Forsaken are still bound. Lanfear, in the old tongue, Daughter of the Night. Nowhere was her real name recorded, but that was the name she had taken for herself, unlike most of the Forsaken who had been named by those they betrayed. Some said she had really been the most powerful of the Forsaken, next to Ishamael, the betrayer of hope, but had kept her powers hidden. Too little was left from that time for any scholar to say for certain. With all the false dragons that are appearing, it is not surprising someone would try to bring Lanfear into it. Moiraine's voice was as unruffled as her face, but inside herself she roiled. Only one thing for certain was known of Lanfear beside the name. Before she went over to the Shadow, before Luz Theron Telamon met Ilyena, Lanfear had been his lover. A complication we do not need. The Amerlin Seat frowned as if she had had the same thought, but Varen nodded as if it were all just words. Other names are clear too, Mother. Lord Luke, of course, was brother to Tigraine, then the daughter heir of Andor, and he vanished in the Blight. Who Isam is, or what he has to do with Luke, I do not know, however. We will find out what we need to know in time, Moiraine said smoothly. There is no proof as yet that this is prophecy. She knew the name. Isam had been the son of Brean, wife of Lane Mandragoran, whose attempt to seize the throne of Malkyr for her husband had brought the Trolloc hordes crashing down. Brean and her infant son had both vanished when the Trollocs overran Malkyr, and Isam had been blood kin to Lan. Or is blood kin? I must keep this from him until I know how he will react, until we are away from the Blight. If he thought Isam were alive... The Watchers wait on Toman Head, Varen went on. There are a few who still cling to the old belief that the armies Artur Hawkwing sent across the Arith Ocean will return one day, though after all this time, she gave a disdainful sniff. The Domier of Ron, the Watchers over the Waves, still have a... community is the best word, I suppose, on Toman Head, at Falma, and one of the old names for Artur Hawkwing was Hammer of the Light. Are you suggesting, daughter, the Amerlin Seat said, that Artur Hawkwing's armies, or rather their descendants, might actually return after 1,000 years? There are rumors of war on Almuth Plain and Toman Head, Moiraine said slowly, and Hawkwing sent 2 of his sons as well as armies. If they did survive in whatever lands they found, there could well be many descendants of Hawkwing, or none. The Amerlin gave Moiraine a guarded look, obviously wishing they were alone, so she could demand to know what Moiraine was up to. Moiraine made a soothing gesture, and her old friend grimaced at her. Varen, with her nose still buried in her notes, noticed none of it. I don't know, Mother. I doubt it, though. We know nothing at all of those lands Artur Hawkwing set out to conquer. It's too bad the sea folk refuse to cross the Arith Ocean. They say the Islands of the Dead lie on the other side. I wish I knew what they meant by that, but that accursed sea folk close-mouthedness. She sighed, still not raising her head. All we have is one reference to lands under the shadow, beyond the setting sun, beyond the Arith Ocean where the armies of night reign. Nothing there to tell us if the armies Hawkwing sent were enough by themselves to defeat these armies of the night, or even to survive Hawkwing's death. Once the War of the 100 Years started, everyone was too intent on carving out their own part of Hawkwing's empire to spare a thought for his armies across the sea. It seems to me, Mother, that if their descendants still lived, and if they ever intended to return, they would not have waited so long.
Then you believe it is not prophecy, daughter?
Now, the ancient tree, Varen said, immersed in her own thoughts. There have always been rumors, no more than that, that while the nation of Almoth still lived, they had a branch of Avendasora, perhaps even a living sapling. And the banner of Almoth was blue for the sky above, black for the earth below, with the spreading tree of life to join them. Of course, Tara Bonners call themselves the Tree of Man and claim to be descended from rulers and nobles in the Age of Legends. And Domani claim descent from those who made the Tree of Life in the Age of Legends. There are other possibilities, but you will note, Mother, that at least three center around Almoth Plain and Toman Head.
The Ammerlin's voice became deceptively gentle. Will you make up your mind, daughter? If Arthur Hawkwing's seed is not returning, then this is not prophecy, and it doesn't matter a rotted fish head what ancient tree is meant.
I can only give you what I know, Mother, Varen said, looking up from her notes, and leave the decision in your hands. I believe the last of Arthur Hawkwing's foreign armies died long ago, but because I believe it does not make it so. The time of change, of course, refers to the end of an age, and the great lord, the Ammerlin slapped the tabletop like a thunderclap.
I know very well who the great lord is, daughter. I think you had better go now.
She took a deep breath and took hold of herself visibly.
Go, Varen. I do not want to become angry with you. I do not want to forget who it was had the cooks leave sweet cakes out at night when I was a novice.
Mother, Moiraine said, there is nothing in this to suggest prophecy. Anyone with a little wit and a little knowledge could put together as much, and no one has ever said Myrdral do not have a sly wit.
And, of course, Varen said calmly, the man who channels must be one of the three young men traveling with you, Moiraine.
Moiraine stared in shock.
Not aware of the world? I am a fool.
Before she realized what she was doing, she had reached out to the pulsing glow she always felt there waiting, to the true source. The one power surged along her veins, charging her with energy, muting the sheen of the power from the Ammerlin seat as she did the same. Moiraine had never before even thought of wielding the power against another Aes Sedai.
We live in perilous times, and the world hangs in the balance, and what must be done, must be done. It must.
Oh, Varen, why did you have to put your nose in where it does not belong? Varen closed her book and slipped it back behind her belt, then looked from one woman to the other. She could not but be aware of the nimbus surrounding each of them, the light that came from touching the true source. Only someone trained in channeling herself could see the glow, but there was no chance of any Aes Sedai missing it in another woman. A hint of satisfaction settled on Varen's face, but no sign that she realized she had hurled a lightning bolt. She only looked as if she had found another piece that fit in a puzzle.
Yes, I thought it must be so. Moiraine could not do this alone, and who better to help than her girlhood friend who used to sneak down with her to snitch sweet cakes?
She blinked.
Forgive me, Mother. I should not have said that.
Varen. Varen. The Ammerlin shook her head wonderingly.
You accuse your sister and me of...
I won't even say it. And you are worried that you've spoken too familiarly to the Ammerlin seat? You bore a hole in the boat and worry that it's raining. Think what you are suggesting, daughter.
It is too late for that, Siouan, Moiraine thought. If we had not panicked and reached for the source, perhaps then, but she is sure now.
Why are you telling us this, Varen? She said aloud. If you believe what you say, you should be telling it to the other sisters, to the Reds in particular.
Varen's eyes widened in surprise.
Yes? Yes, I suppose I should. I hadn't thought of that. But then, if I did, you would be stilled, Moiraine, and you, Mother, and the man gentled. No one has ever recorded the progression in a man who wields the power.
When does the madness come, exactly? And how does it take him? How quickly does it grow? Can he still function with his body rotting around him? For how long? Unless he is gentled, what will happen to the young man, whichever he is, will happen whether or not I am there to put down the answers. If he is watched and guided, we should be able to keep some record with reasonable safety, for a time at least. And, too, there is the Koreathon cycle. She calmly returned their startled looks. I assume, Mother, that he is the dragon reborn. I cannot believe you would do this, leave walking free a man who can channel, unless he was the dragon. She thinks only of the knowledge, Moiraine thought wonderingly. The culmination of the direst prophecy the world knows, perhaps the end of the world, and she cares only about the knowledge. But she is still dangerous for that. Who else knows of this? The Amarlin's voice was faint, but still sharp. Seraphel, I suppose. Who else, Varin?
No one, Mother.
Seraphel is not really interested in anything that someone hasn't already set down in a book, preferably as long ago as possible. She thinks there are enough old books and manuscripts and fragments scattered about, lost or forgotten, to equal 10 times what we have gathered in Tar Valon. She feels certain there is enough of the old knowledge still there to be found for—
Enough, sister, Moiraine said.
She loosed her hold on the true source, and after a moment felt the Amarlin do the same. It was always a loss to feel the power draining away, like blood and life pouring from an open wound. A part of her wanted to hold on, but unlike some of her sisters, she made it a point of self-discipline not to grow too fond of the feeling. Sit down, Varin, and tell us what you know and how you found it out. Leave out nothing. As Varin took a chair, with a look to the Amarlin for permission to sit in her presence, Moiraine watched her sadly. It is unlikely, Varin began, that anyone who hasn't studied the old records thoroughly would notice anything except that you were behaving oddly. Forgive me, Mother. It was nearly 20 years ago, with Tar Valon besieged, that I had my first clue, and that was only—
Light help me, Varin, how I loved you for those sweet cakes, and for your bosom to weep on. But I will do what I must do. I will. I must.
Perrin peered around the corner at the retreating back of the Aes Sedai. She smelled of lavender soap, though most would not have scented it even close up. As soon as she turned out of sight, he hurried for the infirmary door. He had already tried to see Matt once, and that Aes Sedai, Lyanna, he had heard somebody call her, had nearly snapped his head off without even looking around to see who he was. He felt uneasy around Aes Sedai, especially if they started looking at his eyes. Pausing at the door to listen, he could hear no footsteps down the corridor either way, and nothing on the other side of the door, he went in and closed it softly behind him. The infirmary was a long room with white walls. The entrances to archers' balconies at either end let in lots of light. Matt was in one of the narrow beds that lined the walls. After last night, Perrin had expected most of the beds to have men in them, but in a moment he realized the keep was full of Aes Sedai. The only thing an Aes Sedai could not cure by healing was death. To him, the room smelled of sickness anyway. Perrin grimaced when he thought of that. Matt lay still, eyes closed, hands unmoving atop his blankets. He looked exhausted. Not sick, really, but as if he had worked 3 days in the fields and only now laid down to rest. He smelled wrong, though. It was nothing Perrin could put a name to, just wrong. Perrin sat down carefully on the bed next to Matt's. He always did things carefully. He was bigger than most people, and had been bigger than the other boys as long as he could remember. He had had to be careful so he would not hurt someone accidentally or break things. Now it was second nature to him. He liked to think things through, too, and sometimes talk them over with somebody. With Rand thinking he's a lord, I can't talk to him, and Matt certainly isn't going to have much to say. He had gone into one of the gardens the night before to think things through. The memory still made him a little ashamed. If he had not gone, he would have been in his room to go with Egwene and Matt, and maybe he could have kept them from being hurt. More likely, he knew, he would be in one of those beds like Matt, or dead, but that did not change the way he felt. Still, he had gone to the garden, and it was nothing to do with the Trolloc attack that was worrying him now. Serving women had found him sitting there in the dark, and one of the Lady Amelisa's attendants, the Lady Tamora. As soon as they came upon him, Tamora sent one of the others running, and he had heard her say, "Find Leandrin Sedai, quickly." They had stood there watching him as if they had thought he might vanish in a puff of smoke like a gleeman. That had been when the first alarm bell rang and everybody in the keep started running. "Leandrin," he muttered now. "Red Adja. About all they do is hunt for men who channel. You don't think she believes I'm one of those, do you?" Matt did not answer, of course. Perrin rubbed his nose ruefully. "Now I'm talking to myself. I don't need that on top of everything else." Matt's eyelids fluttered.
"Who? Perrin? What happened?"
His eyes did not open all the way, and his voice sounded as if he were still mostly asleep. "Don't you remember, Matt?"
"Remember?"
Matt sleepily raised a hand toward his face, and then let it fall again with a sigh. His eyes began to drift shut.
"Remember, Egwene asked me, go down, see Fane."
He laughed, and it turned into a yawn.
"She didn't ask. Told me. Don't know what happened after."
He smacked his lips and resumed the deep, even breathing of sleep. Perrin leaped to his feet as his ears caught the sound of approaching footsteps, but there was nowhere to go. He was still standing there beside Matt's bed when the door opened, and Lyanna came in. She stopped, put her fists on her hips, and looked him slowly up and down. She was nearly as tall as he was.
"Now you," she said, in tones quiet yet brisk, "are almost a pretty enough boy to make me wish I was a green. Almost. But if you've disturbed my patient, well, I dealt with brothers almost as big as you before I went to the tower, so you needn't think those shoulders will help you any."
Perrin cleared his throat. Half the time he did not understand what women meant when they said things.
"Not like Rand. He always knows what to say to the girls."
He realized he was scowling and wiped it away. He did not want to think about Rand, but he certainly did not want to upset an Aes Sedai, especially one who was beginning to tap her foot impatiently.
I didn't disturb him. He's still sleeping, see?"
"So he is. A good thing for you.
Now, what are you doing in here? I remember chasing you out once. You needn't think I don't.
I only wanted to know how he is."
She hesitated.
"He is sleeping is how he is, and in a few hours, he will get out of that bed and you'll think there was never anything wrong with him."
The pause made his hackles rise. She was lying, somehow. Aes Sedai never lied, but they did not always tell the truth, either. He was not certain what was going on. Leandrin looking for him, Lyanna lying to him. But he thought it was time he got away from Aes Sedai. There was nothing he could do for Matt.
"Thank you," he said. "I'd better let him sleep then. Excuse me."
He tried to slide around her to the door, but suddenly her hand shot out and grabbed his face, tilting it down so she could peer into his eyes. Something seemed to pass through him, a warm ripple that started at the top of his head and went to his feet, then came back again. He pulled his head out of her hands.
"You're as healthy as a young wild animal," she said, pursing her lips. "But if you were born with those eyes, I am a white cloak."
"They're the only eyes I ever had," he growled. He felt a little abashed, speaking to an Aes Sedai in that tone, but he was as surprised as she when he took her gently by the arms and lifted her to one side, setting her down again out of his way. As they stared at each other, he wondered if his eyes were as wide with shock as hers.
"Excuse me," he said again, and all but ran. "My eyes, my light cursed eyes."
The morning sunlight caught his eyes, and they glinted like burnished gold. Rand twisted on his bed, trying to find a comfortable position on the thin mattress. Sunlight streamed through the arrow slits, painting the bare stone walls. He had not slept during the remainder of the night, and tired as he was sure he could not sleep now. The leather jerkin lay on the floor between his bed and the wall, but aside from that, he was fully dressed, even to his new boots. His sword stood propped beside the bed, and his bow and quiver rested in a corner across the bundled cloaks. He could not rid himself of the feeling that he should take the chance Moraine had given him and leave immediately. The urge had been with him all night. 3 times he had risen to go. 2 times he had gone as far as opening the door. The halls had been empty except for a few servants doing late chores. The way had been clear. But he had to know. Perrin came in, head down and yawning, and Rand sat up.
How is Egwene and Matt?
She's asleep, so they tell me. They wouldn't let me into the women's apartments to see her. Matt is... Suddenly Perrin scowled at the floor.
If you're so interested, why haven't you gone to see him yourself? I thought you were not interested in us anymore. You said you weren't.
He pulled open his door of the wardrobe and began rummaging for a clean shirt.
I did go to the infirmary, Perrin. There was an Aes Sedai there, that tall one who's always with the Amarlin seat. She said Matt was asleep, and I was in the way, and I could come back some other time. She sounded like Master Thane ordering the men at the mill. You know how Master Thane is, all full of snap and do it right the first time and do it right now?
Perrin did not answer. He just shucked off his coat and pulled his shirt off over his head. Rand studied his friend's back for a moment, then dug up a laugh.
You want to hear something? You know what she said to me? The Aes Sedai in the infirmary, I mean. You saw how tall she is, as tall as most men. A hand taller and she could almost look me in the eyes. Well, she stared me up and down, and then she muttered, "Tall, aren't you? Where were you when I was 16, or even 30? And then she laughed as if it was all a joke. What do you think of that?
Perrin finished tugging on a clean shirt and gave him a sidelong look. With his burly shoulders and thick curls, he made Rand think of a hurt bear. A bear that did not understand why he had been hurt.
Perrin, if you want to make jokes with Aes Sedai, Perrin broke in, that's up to you, my lord.
He began stuffing his shirt tail into his breeches.
I don't spend much time being witty, is that the word? Witty with Aes Sedai. But then, I'm only a clumsy blacksmith, and I might be in somebody's way, my lord.
Snatching his coat from the floor, he started for the door.
Burn me, Perrin, I'm sorry. I was afraid and I thought I was in trouble. Maybe I was, maybe I still am. I don't know. And I didn't want you and Matt to be in it with me. Light, all the women were looking for me last night. I think that's part of the trouble I'm in. I think so. And Leandrin, she...
He threw up his hands.
Perrin, believe me, you don't want any part of this.
Perrin had stopped, but he stood facing the door and only turned his head enough for Rand to see one golden eye.
Looking for you. Maybe they were looking for all of us. No, they were looking for me. I wish they hadn't been, but I know better.
Perrin shook his head.
Leandrin wanted me anyway, I know. I heard.
Rand frowned.
Why would she? It doesn't change anything. Look, I opened my mouth and said what I shouldn't. I didn't mean it, Perrin. Now please, would you tell me about Matt?
He's asleep. Liana, that's the Aes Sedai, said he would be on his feet in a few hours. He shrugged uncomfortably.
I think she was lying. I know Aes Sedai never lie, not so you can catch them, but she was lying or keeping something back.
He paused, looking at Rand sideways.
You didn't mean all that? We will leave here together? You and me and Matt? I can't, Perrin. I can't tell you why, but I really do have to go by my... Perrin, wait!
The door slammed behind his friend. Rand fell back on the bed.
I can't tell you, he muttered.
He pounded his fist on the side of the bed.
I can't.
But you can go now, a voice said in the back of his head. Egwene's going to be all right, and Matt will be up and around in an hour or two. You can go now, before Moraine changes her mind. He started to sit up when a pounding on the door made him leap to his feet. If it was Perrin come back, he would not knock. The pounding came again.
Who is it?
Lan strode in, pushing the door to behind him with his boot heel. As usual, he wore his sword over a plain coat of green that was nearly invisible in the woods. This time, though, he had a wide golden cord tied high around his left arm, the fringed ends hanging almost to his elbow. On the knot was pinned a golden crane in flight, the symbol of Malkir.
"The Ammerlin's seat wants you, sheepherder. You can't go like that. Out of that shirt and brush your hair. You look like a haystack."
He jerked open the wardrobe and began pawing through the clothes Rand meant to leave behind. Rand stood stiff where he was. He felt as though he had been hit in the head with a hammer. He had expected it, of course, in a way, but he had been sure he would be gone before the summons came.
"She knows. Light, I'm sure of it."
"What do you mean, she wants me? I'm leaving, Lan." "You were right. I'm going to the stable right now, get my horse and leave."
"You should have done that last night."
The warder tossed a white silk shirt onto the bed.
"No one refuses an audience with the Ammerlin seat, sheepherder. Not the Lord Captain Commander of the White Cloaks himself. Pedro Nial might spend the trip planning how to kill her, if he could do it and get away, but he would come."
He turned around with one of the high-collared coats in his hands and held it up.
"This one will do."
Tangled, long-thorned briars climbed each red sleeve in a thick, gold-embroidered line and ran around each cuff. Golden herons stood on the collars, which were edged with gold.
"The color is right, too."
He seemed to be amused at something or satisfied.
"Come on, sheepherder. Change your shirt. Move."
Reluctantly, Rand pulled the coarse wool workman's shirt over his head.
"I'll feel like a fool," he muttered. "A silk shirt? I never wore a silk shirt in my life. And I never wore so fancy a coat, either, even on a feast day. Light, if Perrin sees me in that, burn me. After all that fool talk about being a lord, if he sees me in that, he'll never listen to reason."
"You can't go before the Ammerlin seat dressed like a groom fresh out of the stable, sheepherder. Let me see your boots. They'll do. Well, get on with it. Get on with it. You don't keep the Ammerlin waiting. Wear your sword."
"My sword?"
The silk shirt over his head muffled Rand's yelp. He yanked it the rest of the way on.
"In the women's apartments? Lan, if I go for an audience with the Ammerlin seat, wearing a sword, she'll—"
"Do nothing," Lan cut him off dryly. "If the Ammerlin is afraid of you, and it's smarter for you to think she isn't because I don't know anything that could frighten that woman, it won't be for a sword. Now remember, you kneel when you go before her. One knee only, mind," he added sharply. "You're not some merchant caught giving short weight. Maybe you had better practice it."
"I know how I think. I saw the Queen's guards knelt to Queen Morgaise."
The ghost of a smile touched the warder's lips.
"Yes, you'd do it just as they did. That will give them something to think about."
Rand frowned.
"Why are you telling me this, Lan? You're a warder. You're acting as if you are on my side."
"I am on your side, sheepherder, a little. Enough to help you a bit."
The warder's face was stone, and sympathetic words sounded strange in that rough voice.
"What training you've had, I gave you, and I'll not have you groveling and sniveling. The wheel weaves us all into the pattern as it wills. You have less freedom about it than most, but by the light, you can still face it on your feet. You remember who the Ammerlin seat is, sheepherder, and you show her proper respect. But you do what I tell you, and you look her in the eye. Well, don't stand there gaping. Tuck in your shirt."
Rand shut his mouth and tucked in his shirt.
"Remember who she is? Burn me what I wouldn't give to forget who she is."
Lan kept up a running flow of instructions while Rand shrugged into the red coat and buckled on his sword. What to say and to whom, and what not to say. What to do and what not. How to move, even. He was not sure he could remember it all. Most of it sounded odd and easy to forget, and he was sure whatever he forgot would be just the thing to make the Aes Sedai angry with him.
If they aren't already. If Moraine told the Ammerlin seat, who else did she tell? Lan, why can't I just leave the way I planned? By the time she knew I was not coming, I'd be a league outside the walls and galloping.
And she'd have trackers after you before you had gone too. What the Ammerlin wants, sheepherder, she gets.
He adjusted Rand's sword belt so the heavy buckle was centered.
What I do is the best I can for you, believe it.
But why all this?
What does it mean? Why do I put my hand over my heart if the Ammerlin seat stands up? Why refuse anything but water? Not that I want to eat a meal with her. Then dribble some on the floor and say, the land thirsts. And if she asks how old I am, why tell her how long it is since I was given the sword? I don't understand half of what you've told me.
3 drops, sheep herder. Don't pour it. You sprinkle 3 drops only. You can understand later so long as you remember now. Think of it as upholding custom. The Ammerlin will do with you as she must. If you believe you can avoid it, then you believe you can fly to the moon like Len. You can't escape, but maybe you can hold your own for a while, and perhaps you can keep your pride at least. The light burned me. I am probably wasting my time, but I've nothing better to do. Hold still. From his pocket, the warder produced a long length of wide-fringed golden cord and tied it around Rand's left arm in a complicated knot. On the knot, he fastened a red enameled pin, an eagle with its wings spread. I had that made to give you, and now is as good a time as any. That will make them think. There was no doubt about it now. The warder was smiling. Rand looked down at the pin worriedly. Caldazar, the red eagle of Monetherin. A thorn to the Dark One's foot, he murmured, and a bramble to his hand. He looked at the warder. Monetherin's long dead and forgotten, Lan. It's just a name in a book now. There is only the 2 rivers. Whatever else I am, I'm a shepherd and a farmer, that's all.
Well, the sword that could not be broken was shattered in the end, sheepherder, but it fought the shadow to the last. There was 1 rule above all others for being a man. Whatever comes, face it on your feet. Now, are you ready? The Ammerlin seat waits.
With a cold knot on the pit of his belly, Rand followed the warder into the hall.